the unknown.
Mystery.
Space.
Science!
Have fun.
Adventure.
Suspense.
Fantasy.
Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror.
Welcome to Journey 28 of the Journey Into podcast, featuring Horatio Hornblower in The Examination for Lieutenant. I am your guide on this journey, Marshall Latham, coming to you from base camp in Turner, Oregon. This is our fourth adventure with Horatio. I really enjoy hearing these tales come to life. If the character of Hornblower isn't familiar to you in the context of these novels by Forrester, you may recognize his characteristics in someone more contemporary and accessible to geekdom. Maybe as the captain of the starship USS Enterprise? It is told that Gene Roddenberry had Horatio in mind when creating the starship captains for Star Trek, particularly more so in that of Jean-Luc Picard. As I listen to these productions, it is fun to pick out the correlation between Hornblower and Picard. Give it a try while you come with me as we journey into examination and bravery.
We present Nigel Anthony in The Hornblower Story, adapted from four of the C.S. Forrester novels by Val Gielgud. Part 4 from Mr. Midshipman Hornblower, The Examination for Lieutenant.
Most of us from time to time have had to face the ordeal of examinations. We've had to endure that hideous mixture of self-questioning, of what I have heard described as butterflies in the stomach. Yet I would venture to assert that for a midshipman, the examination for lieutenant is, of all examinations, the most grueling. Pass it, the next day the admiral would confirm the order, and the midshipman would be a lieutenant with 2 months' seniority. Fail, and he would revert to midshipman with 2 months' seniority lost. And it would be another 6 months at least before he could try again. It could affect the whole of his subsequent career. I was acting lieutenant when Indefatigable glided into Gibraltar Bay, and Captain Pellew sent for me.
Come. Ah, Mr. Hornblower.
You sent for me, sir?
I did, Mr. Hornblower. Now, what crimes have you committed lately?
I don't know, sir.
Nor do I. Relax, Mr. Hornblower. I hope I have what you may consider as good news. Tomorrow there will be an examination for lieutenant aboard the Santa Barbara. As acting lieutenant, I have found your conduct satisfactory. You are, I hope, ready to take the examination?
I suppose I...
Oh, come now, Mr. Hornblower.
Yes, sir.
That is better. You report then on board Santa Barbara with your certificates and journals.
Aye, aye, sir.
You have my permission to leave ship tomorrow, and you may use one of the ship's boats.
Thank you, sir.
And I should like to wish you good luck, Mr. Hornblower. See that your number one uniform is spick and span. Borrow a clean shirt. And remember your sword and buckled shoes. Oh, I know that the life of midshipman's cocked hat is hard, but do what you can to get rid of those dents.
Yes, sir.
And if I were you, I should not try to read through the whole of Clark's complete handbook of seamanship during the course of this evening. I'm sure that you will take with you the good wishes of all the gunroom besides mine, Mr. Hornblower.
It seemed that the whole crew of Indefatigable had turned out to see me leave the ship. I wore my sword, white breeches and buckled shoes, and under my arm carried a bundle of journals together with my certificates of sobriety and good conduct. It was late in the afternoon when I was rowed over to the Santa Barbara, a prison hulk, one of the prizes captured by Lord Rodney in 1780. A store ship in time of peace, a prison in time of war. Red-coated soldiers, muskets loaded and bayonets fixed, guarded the gangways.
Mr. Midshipman Hornblower reporting, sir. Examination for lieutenant.
Whoever would have guessed it? 15 of your kind have already come on board.
15?
You're number 16, young gentleman. Every courtesy midshipman in the Mediterranean fleet seems ambitious for a lieutenant's rank. Quaint notion some of them have too, Mr. Hornblower. One of them told me he deserved to pass because his granddad served under Clive in Bengal. There must be 40 of them all told.
Might I ask you, sir, how many will they pass, do you think?
Maybe 5, if they're in a generous mood. The captains are coming aboard now. Dreadnought Foster.
I've heard of him.
You've heard of a proper tail twister. That's Harvey of the dockyard. Ah, a black Charlie Hammond. Looking as if he'd lost a guinea and found sixpence.
Captain Hammond?
The same. And damn your eyes for your impertinence in presenting yourself for examination in your present state of ignorance. Yes, Black Charlie. Never forgets a thing. Failed one of you young gentlemen last month for having lost his pet poodle overside from a cutter in Port of Spain 2 years before. Rather you than me, Mr. Hornblower. Rather you than me.
Hardly an encouraging introduction. One candidate after another emerged from the after cabin, from an interview averaging perhaps 10 minutes. I was reminded of French aristocrats waiting at the foot of the scaffold. I thought I would do my best to imitate their sang-froid. I had little confidence that I would succeed. It was only when I had entered the cabin that I remembered I had not straightened my neckcloth and realized that my sword was not hanging correctly. I blinked nervously at the three grim faces across the table.
Well, sir, report yourself. We've no time to waste.
Hornblower, sir. Horatio Hornblower. Midshipman. Acting lieutenant. HMS Indefatigable.
Your certificates, please.
Here, sir.
Very well. Now, Mr. Hornblower, you close hauled on the port tack, beating up channel with a nor'easterly wind blowing hard and Dover bearing north 2 miles. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Right. Now, the wind veers 4 points and takes you flat aback. What do you do, sir? Go on, what do you do? By now you're dismasted, Mr. Hornblower. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Dismasted, Mr. Hornblower. With Dover under your lee. You are in serious trouble. You agree?
Yes, sir. Serious indeed.
What the devil's that? I don't know about you, Hammond, but I'd say...
Don't bother to say it, Foster. We've both heard cannon fire in our time.
That's a rocket, by God.
This board is adjourned. On deck, gentlemen.
See? There, Captain Hammond.
Fire ships. Officer of the watch, call my gig.
Aye, aye, sir.
Captain Hammond's gig, come alongside.
Aye, aye, sir.
He's coming, sir.
So I should damn well hope. Foster, Harvey, we must rejoin our ships.
What about me, sir?
You, young shaver, into the stern sheets with you. You can take the boat back to your Indefatigable when we've done with her. Pull, young man. Pull like the devil.
Aye, aye, sir.
We'd do better if you'd take an oar, Hammond.
As your senior, Foster, it is my business to look after the tiller.
You happen also to be a better oar.
Oh, I know you, Foster. Put you at the tiller, and next thing we'll be heading for Dreadnought.
Is it so strange that I should want to get back to me ship?
It is not. And the same applies to me. So we're heading for Calypso. My God, look at that.
It was certainly a sight worth seeing. The Spaniards had sent over a squadron of fireships from Algeciras under cover of darkness. And they were running before the wind into the bay, straight for the line of our anchored ships. Suddenly, a line of orange flame lit up the water, as one Spanish vessel after another was fired by her skeleton crew. Straight ahead of us was a small brig, flames spouting through her ports and roaring up her hatches, like a set piece in a fireworks display at Vauxhall. Then suddenly she checked and began to swing slowly round.
She'll be across Santa Barbara's cable, sir.
I can see that, thank you, Mr. Hornblower.
God help him aboard there. She'll be alongside her in a minute and every one of the 1,000 prisoners battened down below.
With a man at her wheel, the brig could be steered clear, sir.
Oh, no doubt of it.
The youngster's right, Captain Hammond. Hmm? We ought to tackle it.
No, if you ask me, you're both mad. Oh, very well. Pull for her.
Under her counter, Hammond. I'll jump for it.
I'm lighter than you, sir. Let me go.
You're an impudent brat. You can come with me if you like. Hard over.
Hard over it is. Good luck to you. Try to lay her aground. I'll get a boat to follow and take you off.
I stood up on a thwart and jumped, gripped something, hauled myself clumsily to the brig's deck. Captain Foster followed me. The brig's wheel had been lashed with rope before her crew abandoned her. I hacked at it with my dirk, but for a moment I believed nothing could save us from collision with the Santa Barbara, starboard bow to starboard bow. In the light of the flames, I could see the figures of the gesticulating and panic-stricken crowd on Santa Barbara's forecastle. I spun the wheel desperately. Captain Foster emerged from the smother aft, his neckcloth wrapped across his mouth.
Mr. Hornblower!
Aye, aye, sir.
Midships! They must part to boom us off!
Aye, aye, sir.
There's Dauntless on our port bow. Keep her clear!
Aye, aye, sir.
Well done, youngster. We are clear. Just clear. Starboard a point, and we'll lay her aground on the shoal by the neutral zone.
Starboard a point it is, sir. Shall I lash the wheel again?
If you can. Watch those burning sparks!
Lashing's no good, I'm afraid, sir. Tiller ropes burned away.
Can you swim?
Not very well, I think, sir.
Now's your chance to find out. Hammond said he'd send a boat to follow and take us off. We'll find out about that, too. Jump for it!
You're coming too, sir.
In a moment, very regretfully, yes. Get rid of that sword belt, you young fool. Hammond, ahoy! Hammond! Boat there, ahoy!
I just succeeded in struggling back to the surface, and I recall seeing Captain Foster beating the water with increasing feebleness. I remember even at that moment feeling surprised that captains of much seniority were liable to the weaknesses of ordinary mortals like myself. Then I saw the dark shape of an approaching boat, clutched at its gunwale, made the effort to keep still and wait quietly while Captain Foster was hauled in over the stern. My turn came and I was dragged aboard, falling face downward. I rolled over and saw Captain Foster sitting doubled up in the bottom of the boat. Three men were rowing, men with swarthy faces and long black moustaches. One displayed a knife with obvious meaning.
Who the deuce are these fellows?
Spanish fireship's crew, sir, I fancy. We're prisoners.
Damnation!
Shall we try?
No, no use. How are we heading?
North, sir. Maybe they're aiming to land us in the neutral zone and then take us across the line.
It's their best chance. Two other ships burning themselves out over there. I wonder how many fireships in all came in.
I counted five, sir.
Not much damage done. It was a brave endeavor. For all that,
Whoever would have credited the Dons with the pluck to make such an attempt?
I should judge they've learned about the use of fire ships from us, sir.
So you think we may have nursed the pinion that impelled the steel, eh?
You read poetry, sir.
And remember it sometimes.
One of our guard boats, sir.
We're both aboard with some Spanish company!
Coming alongside!
The Spaniards made a desperate attempt to turn our boat away. The guard boat came dashing alongside and its crew leapt aboard us, knocking Captain Foster, myself, and the Spaniards into one struggling heap. Its lantern gave light enough for us to be sorted out. As Captain Foster scrambled to his feet, I did not like the expression on his face.
Captain Hammond, I believe.
Thank God you're safe, Foster.
Certainly no thanks to you, Captain Hammond.
After the fire brig cleared the Santa Barbara, the wind took you. Faster than we could keep up with you.
Captain Hammond, Mr. Hornblower and I were only saved from drowning by Spaniards. I had thought I could rely on a brother post-captain. It seems I was mistaken.
I don't care for your implication, Captain Foster.
It is a matter not of implication, Captain Hammond, but of simple fact. Others may agree with me.
I consider that an offensive remark, sir.
Your perspicacity is remarkable.
Look, this is hardly a discussion we can pursue in pleasant company, Captain Foster. I shall send a friend to wait upon you.
He will be more than welcome, sir.
Then I'll wish you a very good night, Captain Foster. I shall take these prisoners aboard the Calypso. No doubt you will prefer to return to Dreadnought. And no doubt Mr. Hornblower is capable of seeing you safely aboard her.
No doubt.
Good night to you, Mr. Hornblower. Give way there!
Sir, perhaps...
You think it odd, don't you, youngster, that having just escaped drowning by the skin of my teeth, I should choose to thrust myself immediately into peril of death by shooting in a duel.
I suppose I do, sir.
And you're perfectly right. It is odd. Damned odd. I felt like it, that's all. I shall want you to go aboard Calypso in the morning, Mr. Hornblower. I want it explained that I wish those three Spanish prisoners sent back to Cartagena free without exchange. They saved our lives. We can do no less for them.
I think that is just, sir.
Thank you. May I offer you two my thanks, you young fire-eater? Should I live beyond tomorrow, I shall see that authority is informed of your good conduct.
Thank you, sir. There is just one thing, if I may mention it.
Well?
The examination, sir. My certificate.
That particular board will never reassemble, I fear, Mr. Hornblower. You must wait your opportunity to go before another.
Aye, aye, sir.
You must have realized, Mr. Hornblower, that when we were so rudely interrupted, you were in something of a pickle. If I recall, you were flatter back, about to lose your spars, and with Dover Cliffs under your lee. In one more minute, unless I'm much mistaken, you would have been failed. You were saved by that warning gun. You agree?
I realize I must, sir.
Then be thankful for small mercies. You and I both have some cause to be thankful also for large ones. Examinations have their uses, Mr. Hornblower. I suggest to you that experience can be even more valuable.
Yes, sir.
I'm under the impression that Captain Pellew agrees with me. Remember that when you report to him.
I will, sir. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure for me to have been associated with you, Mr. Hornblower. Unless I'm much mistaken, you will go far in your chosen profession.
You are very kind, sir.
I'm not kind at all. There's very little kind about service at sea. You know the elements of your business, Mr. Hornblower. What you need now is a reasonable share of good fortune.
I had reason to remember Captain Foster's words when a few weeks later I brought the sloop Le Rêve, captured as prize, to anchor in Gibraltar Bay. It only remained for me to report myself to Captain Sir Edward Pellew.
Glad to see you, Mr. Hornblower. This sloop now, what's her name?
Le Rêve, sir.
Just so. You say she shows a fair turn of speed?
And handy enough, sir.
No doubt we'll take her into the service. Never enough dispatch vessels.
No, sir.
In which case, she will have to proceed to England. I have dispatches for Plymouth, Mr. Hornblower. You may be requested and required to take La Rêve to England under your command.
My independent command, sir?
It well may be. Meanwhile, I have an invitation for you. The Governor has been made aware of your exploit in the taking of La Rêve. Their Excellencies Major General Sir Hugh and Lady Dalrymple request the pleasure of Acting Lieutenant Horatio Hornblower's company at dinner today, at 3 o'clock, at Government House. You appear to find the pleasure a mixed one, Mr. Hornblower.
Your pardon, sir. I have only my sea chest. I was wondering how I could dress myself suitably for such a function.
You have friends aboard, Indefatigable, I believe.
I hope I have, sir.
There is, for instance, Mr. Kennedy. He comes of a wealthy family. I've no doubt he would lend you a pair of China silk stockings.
Unfortunately, sir, my legs are...
Skinny, eh?
You can see for yourself, sir.
Quite. I suggest that you profit from my own experience in a similar case. Apply to our surgeon, Mr. Lowe. Ask him for 2 small pads of oakum and some strips of sticking plaster. Apply them to advantage and you will have legs of which you need not be ashamed. Legs of which any gentleman can be proud. There is nothing like experience, Mr. Hornblower.
Kennedy and Lowe were as good as Captain Pellew's word. In due course, I made my way, pretty nervously, I confess, to Government House. There I was taken in charge by the usual polished and languid aide-de-camp and introduced to Sir Hugh, a red-faced and fussy old gentleman, and to Lady Dalrymple, an equally red-faced and fussy old lady.
Glad to see you, Mr. Hornblower.
Your Excellency, Lady Dalrymple.
I must present you, Mr. Hornblower. Your Grace, this is Mr. Hornblower, the new captain of La Rêve. Her Grace, the Duchess of Wharfdale.
So this is the young fellow in question, Sir Hugh. Matilda, my dear, do I understand as you're entrusting me to an infant in arms?
I beg your pardon, Your Grace.
Everything will be explained to you in due time, Mr. Hornblower.
You look like a gander on a green, young man. I'd expect you to hiss any moment. No, we mustn't be hard on the young fellow, Matilda. He can be proud of having a ship entrusted to him at his age.
Very kind of you, Duchess.
Shall we go in to dinner?
Oh, thank you, Matilda. I'm thirsty, and that's a fact.
You'll sit here, Mr. Hornblower.
Thank you.
I can't say I envy you. Jolly boon companion you're going to have.
You mean?
Her Grace of Wharfdale.
How in heaven?
You've not been informed.
As always, the man most concerned is the last to know. When you sail tomorrow with Captain Pellew's dispatches for England, you will have the honour of the company of Her Grace, the Duchess of Wharfdale.
God bless my soul.
Let's hope he does, Mr. Hornblower. Poor stuff, this sweet Malaga. The governor before Sir Hugh bought a job lot in 95, and His Excellency thinks it his duty to use it up.
But do tell me, who is she?
You heard Lady Dalrymple's introduction.
She doesn't talk like a duchess.
Oh, hardly. The old duke was in his dotage when he married her. Her friends say she was an innkeeper's widow. And you can imagine what her enemies call her.
What is she doing here?
On her way back to England. She was in Florence, I understand, when the French marched in. She reached Leghorn and bribed a coaster to bring her here. Then she asked Sir Hugh to find her a passage. Sir Hugh applied to the Admiral. He would ask anyone for anything on behalf of the Duchess.
I see.
over. Your homeward voyage shall not be lacking in mirth, Mr. Hornblower. Beef from Tetuan, tough and stringy as always.
I find it delicious.
You do?
After beating about at sea in an overcrowded frigate.
Of course. Any change would be for the better. Do not let the thought of the Duchess spoil your appetite, Mr. Hornblower. I can recommend you the meringues and macaroons, or alternatively the custards and fresh fruits. I find that such sweet things spoil my palate.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, if you will be upstanding, I give you the toast. His Majesty, the King.
The King! God bless him!
God bless him. And your health and a safe voyage home, Duchess.
Thanks. Perhaps someone would fill me glass.
I didn't see. I trust you did not imagine...
Oh, don't fuss, Matilda. You don't drink here in Gibraltar as we do in Wharfdale.
Discipline of the service, you know, Duchess.
Oh?
Gentlemen, a toast I am sure you will appreciate. May the Spaniards' treasure galleons try to cross the Atlantic.
May I add something?
Yes, indeed.
May the Dons make up their minds to leave Cadiz.
And a bumper to the Dons, then. And may they soon quit Cadiz. I fancy Admiral Johnny Jarvis would say amen to that.
It's all very well for Johnny Jarvis, Sir Hugh. What about me and the youngster here if the Spaniards come out while we are on our way home?
Oh, you will be in the capable charge of Mr. Hornblower, Duchess. I am sure he will take good care of such a precious passenger.
I hope so. I must say, I hope so very much.
Oh, my dear Duchess, you may be assured that His Majesty's Navy, in the person of Mr. Hornblower, will leave nothing undone for your comfort and safety.
As soon as was decently possible, I made my excuses to His Excellency and slipped away. I had much on my mind, and I was determined not to be heavy with drink the night before sailing in my independent command. I found it something of a relief to re-board Indefatigable and report myself to Captain Pellew. There was a quizzical look in his eye, and I fancy that he was not entirely ignorant of the reputation and history of Her Grace of Wharfdale.
So, there you are, Mr. Hornblower, dispatches. I need hardly emphasize the importance of their safe delivery to my lords.
No, sir.
Any comments?
No, sir.
I should prefer a tone of rather greater certainty. Something on your mind?
Well, sir...
Come along, Mr. Hornblower. We've known each other now for some months. Out with it.
I heard, sir, at the governor's dinner this afternoon, that there is a likelihood of the Spaniards coming out of Cadiz.
It's possible. Admiral Jarvis would be glad to see them.
Of course, sir. I fear I was thinking of myself.
All of us do that.
The smallest brig at sea carries a more powerful armament than Lereth. 4 popgun 4-pounders. She'll be safe from no one.
True. You must therefore rely on your sails and your sailing.
But the dispatches...
They'll be waited. If there should be any risk of capture, see that they go overboard.
Certainly, sir. But there's the lady.
Her Grace of Wharfdale.
Yes, sir.
You can hardly drop a duchess overboard, Mr. Hornblower. I see your difficulty.
Would you advise me, sir?
The Duchess's passage in La Reve, Mr. Hornblower, is Sir Hugh Dalrymple's responsibility, not mine, thank God. I can only suggest to you that you make sure that your 2 watchkeeping officers know their duties, that you put on your smartest seagoing uniform, and that you eat a hearty breakfast before you sail.
Yes, sir.
My experience of the sex has been a limited one, Mr. Hornblower. Her Grace will probably surprise you, as she would me, in more ways than one. At the same time, from what I've heard of her, she's no madam of falals, frills, and perfumes. She comes of solid stock. It took courage to pass from Italy to Gibraltar in time of war. I doubt her giving way to the vapours. If I were you, I should treat her like a man.
Like a man, sir?
Just so, Hornblower. After all, she is no chicken. Good luck to you, Mr. Hornblower.
So there it was. No use to worry about my command. No use to hope that if the Spaniards left Cadiz, they might encounter Admiral Jervis's fleet rather than La Reve. Less than no use to think of Her Grace the Duchess of Wharfdale and her singular language nor of my four popguns. Best to remember that with luck, I might be seeing England again after 3 years at sea.
In part four of the Hornblower story, you heard Nigel Anthony as Lord Hornblower, the narrator, with Nicholas Fry in the role of Horatio as a youth. Captain Sir Edward Pellew was played by Ronald Herdman. Captain Hammond of Calypso, James Tomlinson. Captain Foster of Dreadnought, Ian Flintoff. Sir Hugh Dalrymple, George Hagen. Lady Dalrymple, Joan Anstey. The Duchess of Wharfdale, Rosalind Knight. Aide-de-camp, Ralph Lawford. Officer of the Santa Barbara, Randall Hurley. Location recordings were made by Christopher Hayton Webb and David Fleming Williams aboard the Ketch IP Torso. The Hornblower story is directed in Manchester by Trevor Hill.
I wish something that exciting had happened to me when I was in the middle of examinations I've taken in my life. The only one that I can recall of this magnitude was when I graduated from engineering college and took the Engineering and Training Fundamental Engineering Exam, or the EITFE. It was an 8-hour open book test that I had spent a semester preparing for. I remember it being not easy by any means, but definitely less grueling than I had conjured up in my mind while studying for it. I worked through the problems I knew best, struggled as best I could, and looked up the problems that I had at least a little bit of knowledge on how to proceed, and flat out guessed on the rest. I did pass, so that is something. I even came close once to taking my professional engineer exam, but the work that I have enjoyed doing most doesn't really require it. I could do it just to say I did it, but my drive for bragging rights hasn't pushed me too hard in that direction. Of course, there are software certifications for the work I do, but experience and the communal knowledge of my office makes those less stressful. I really like this part of Horatio Hornblower's career, because he's just beginning to see the bigger picture of how the world, and more particularly the British military, works. I think he learns quite a bit by his frank discussion with Captain Foster. Oh, a bit more geek trivia for you. In the A&E television Hornblower series that I talked about in a previous show, Captain Foster is played by Dennis Lawson, who you may more readily recognize as Wedge Antilles from the original Star Wars trilogy. Another great role for Lawson that I saw was that of John Jarndyce in the BBC's adaptation of Bleak House by Charles Dickens. Shake me up, Judy! For this week's other podcast story recommendations, I'm going to recommend the story Beachcombing by Ray Cluley that played on The Dune Steve back in November. It's a story of a mentally challenged child who senses emotions and past experiences from objects that he finds on the beach. And I can't say it's a fun story, because there's some deeper themes, some negative themes, including suicide. But the story really has an emotional resonance that has kept me thinking about it. So if you're up for a story like that, I really recommend that story from The Dune Steve. And again, I'd like to invite you to go to the Journey Into forums and Journey Into discussion about Horatio Hornblower or any other story or topic that you have. You can find the forums at journeyinto.freeforums.org. I also invite you to go to the blog site and to donate to the podcast. I've purchased some really good stories recently, but I'm beginning to get tapped out. So I'd really appreciate any donations that you'd like to make. The blog site is journeyintopodcast.blogspot.com. And I also encourage you, until next week, to journey on. The Journey Into Podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, which means that you can share it all you like, but don't sell it or change it. The theme music for this podcast is brought to you by Man in Space.